What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. How you doing, Jack?
Pretty well, Nick. Good start, not the best finish.
Exactly. You know, good start, not a great finish. Nets lost this one, 108-96 in OKC against a very good team. But before we get into that, quick reminder, check us out, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Feel free to shoot us a comment, subscription, a review, whatever it is. But Jack, I'm going to pass it to you.
So, Nick, the first half seemed to be a really positive impact, you know, 52-42 in the Nets' favor. Let's talk about that first before we get to the negative side of it in that second half.
Yeah, Nets continued what they did against Detroit, and that was play great defense, force turnovers, get active in transition a little bit, get some good shots. Not necessarily a ton of free throws like we've seen in previous games, but that's because of OKC's, you know, defense. But overall, you know, the first half felt like the Nets were in rhythm. They were kind of disrupting OKC. What they did to them in the second half, Nets were kind of doing their offense, like I said, continuing what they did against Detroit. Spencer Dinwiddie was great off the bench. Just overall, the team was playing well. Some really good energy from Rodions. D'Angelo had a couple good moments. And then the second half, it just all changed.
So what changed, Nick? What are the specific things that gave OKC the momentum? I think a lot of it doesn't necessarily seem like the Nets were doing a horrible job, but that OKC were just doing a much better job. And with the talent of the likes of two sort of top 10, top 15 players, and Westbrook and Paul George sort of just took over.
Yeah, you know, OKC just kind of turned it up. Not to say they weren't prepared for the Nets, but they didn't necessarily match their intensity in the first half. The second half, OKC took it to a playoff team type of intensity. You know, physicality-wise, they really got into the Nets, disrupted their offense, took them out of doing things they wanted to do. Terrence Ferguson did an excellent job of smothering Joe Harris. Very few clean looks from him, kind of took him out of the game. And just the Nets kind of didn't react to it well. They got a little sloppy, started taking bad shots, settling, allowed OKC to get in transition. They got some easy shots. Seemed like the Nets were getting a little frustrated. You know, they weren't necessarily getting calls on the road, but that's something you're going to have to deal with. And they kind of allowed that to impact their play. So it was OKC turning their game up to another level and the Nets not doing it, instead kind of reacting in a negative way.
Well, yeah, getting outscored 66-44 in the second half. It's generally not going to be a positive thing for the Brooklyn Nets. And I think that, you know, you're talking about Joe Harris. It's still looking at the box score, still 3 of 6 from the field. But I really rate a guy like Terrence Ferguson. I really like his length. Obviously, might have a mild amount of bias to the fact that he used to play in the NBL for a little bit for the Adelaide 36ers, mind you. But let's go through a few players, Nick. Alan Crabb leading the team in minutes again with 35 minutes. Do you think that was justified?
I think Kenny was probably trying to give him a rhythm. After the game, during his press conference, he talked about wanting Crabb to take more shots. So I think there's just some confidence trying to get him going. And I think also Rodion's getting in foul trouble, him not necessarily wanting to play Jared Dudley a ton of minutes. So that's kind of why Alan Crabb got in there. And he was, you know, doing a good job staying active. And I don't think they were giving Crabb as much attention as they were giving Harris. So the opportunity for Crabb to have a big game was there. He just didn't do it, and he wasn't aggressive enough.
Yeah, I coined him Katy Perry. He's either hot or he's cold. but unfortunately, he just wasn't hot tonight. But Rodon's obviously had some more minutes in the absence of Damari Carroll, Nick. 27 minutes, 4 turnovers, 4 personal fouls. What was the game like from him?
You know, he had his moments, you know, bringing the energy, bringing the juice. Obviously, OKC is a better team than Detroit and some of the other teams the Nets have faced. So he kind of had to react a little differently. Also, defense a lot better from OKC, especially inside. So I think that kind of hurt his game. There's a couple times where he went for a dunk or a layup, and it kind of resulted in either an offensive foul or getting a shot blocked. So, you know, Rodions is going to have to adjust to some of these other teams, especially ones that are, you know, superiorly athletic and more physical. You know, a lot of times he has the athletic advantage where you look at a team like OKC, they're full of great athletes. And if they're not a great athlete, they have some great muscle.
Yeah, I think there aren't going to be many teams in the playoffs Nets are going to come up against that are as athletically gifted as this OKC team. Maybe a team like Boston, Toronto as well. Those are two likely teams, actually. So maybe I'm making my own words in that sort of sense. But I think Rodion's still having an impact is always a positive thing. Still having 2 steals, still doing his thing. But looking at D'Angelo Russell, Nick, obviously 34 minutes, not the most efficient night, but 3 steals as well. Were they just sort of, he just got lucky, he just fell into the steals, or did we see some more defensive activity from him?
I felt like in the first quarter, in the first half of this game, D'Angelo, Spencer Dinwiddie, both were really locked in defensively, just getting their hands in there and just disrupting OKC, you know, and just not allowing them to get inside, poking at the ball, you know, results in a foul or not, but they got the steal. In the second half, it was kind of the opposite. Like, they just weren't as aggressive. They were kind of allowing OKC to have their influence in the game. They were doing, you know, getting Russell Westbrook to isolate on D'Angelo Russell, putting him in a mismatch, and obviously he's not going to win that. So I think that was a real issue.
Yeah, and in terms of the battle between the bigs, Jared Allen, Steven Adams, who do you think gained the ascendancy for their team?
I feel like Jared Allen actually might have had a better first half. He was just more active. He was especially offensively. But then in the second half, Steven Adams started to have a bigger impact. You know, either was it scoring or was it just setting good screens or getting those offensive boards? Six offensive boards from him, and that was a big issue for the Nets tonight.
Yeah, getting out rebounded 51-43. Not the biggest discrepancy, but at the same time, you know, when you've got a guy like Steven Adams, who's one of the best rebounders in the NBA, I know I've had discussions with Nick on JBT before. Through fan questions about whether it's him, whether it's Andre Drummond, but I rate Steven Adams incredibly highly. But going to the bench units, Nick, you know, the likes of Ed Davis, Jared Dudley, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, how did the benches sort of match up with OKC?
You know, I think they obviously missed Damari Carroll. Not to say Jared Dudley was bad, but Damari would have definitely brought a little extra edge, especially for some of those 50-50 balls and just some of those small plays. You know, Dinwiddie was awesome. Dinwiddie definitely, the Nets wouldn't have been in this game without him, especially first half, second half. Getting to the rim, he had no problem, no matter who was on him in OKC. And I thought that was really impressive, considering OKC, most people would say, is the best defense in the league, or, you know, top three at the very least. So his ability to get inside, 10 free throw attempts, 8 of 17 from the field, 25 points. I loved his game. Like, I love the way Spencer's been playing. You know, I think the first two games back, he wasn't necessarily amazing from the injury. Now he's kind of finding his rhythm and really attacking that second unit. Caris LeVert, you know, another hot and cold game, 3 of 10 from the field. No issue getting inside like we talked about on previous shows. It's just kind of finishing in there. Maybe not necessarily getting the same foul calls he was early in the year, being a bench player, and the refs can kind of tell he's a little out of control and out of rhythm. But 4 assists, 0 turnovers, was some positive moments. I think defensively he still had a solid game. You know, the Nets did give up some shots to Westbrook in the pull-up range that he hit, but overall I thought LeVert did a good job defending tonight. So just another hot and cold game for him. And if he can somehow find his balance before the playoffs, that would pretty much be the X factor for this team in my eyes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with that sort of thing. He's got so much potential. We've seen it sort of early in the season. But harking back to Spencer Dinwiddie, I think, you know, the fact that it was a nationally televised game, sort of checking Twitter every now and then, Spencer was getting a lot of love, and I think that he may now be on one of the bargain contracts of the NBA. You know, I think someone, I can't remember who it was, it was someone from SB Nation or someone from Nets, someone was just putting out the fact that he is on less than $15 million per year as one of the best bench players in the league and starting level caliber players in the league is an absolute steal for the Nets. And, you know, he's at his peak and he's going to continue at this level. You know, we can't see necessarily any drop off, Nick. But a little touch on the turnover, 17-12. Was that much of an impact?
Yeah, I think the first half it was the Nets were in favor. They were in control, forcing OKC to turn over the ball. Second half, I know in the third quarter alone at one point they had 7 turnovers, and that's just because OKC turned up the defense. They were disrupting them, and the Nets weren't doing a good job doing that to OKC in the second half. So it's like they swapped roles from the first to second half, and I thought the turnovers were huge. It kind of allowed OKC to get some easy transition buckets, which kind of got them in a rhythm offensively.
Yeah, and I mean, you can't necessarily give that many turnovers though to one of the best teams in the Western Conference. So obviously it's something to tighten up. But any final thoughts on this one, Nick, before we head into Utah? In fact, I'll pose a question to you via the man himself, Michael Grady. How did the Nets respond when an opponent with firepower takes their intensity to a whole other level? Obviously the likes of Paul George, Russell Westbrook against Utah. There's a guy like Donovan Mitchell who's a sensational player and is finding some real form. This Western Conference road trip is going to have some pretty tough opponents. So how did the Nets sort of adjust in that sort of moment? Is it on Kenny? Is it on the players? What are your thoughts?
I think one thing for the players is to kind of stay with their game and not get frustrated. And, you know, at times the Nets will get flustered and then they'll start jacking up threes when they don't necessarily at that point, where it's like, just relax, stay in your moment. Teams are going to make runs. I think it's just about the Nets kind of finding almost a balance and trying not to overstress the moment. Obviously, some of it's on the coach calling a timeout and some of the players adjusting. And then some circumstances, you know, OKC has, like you said, Jack, probably two of the top 15 players in the league, and Westbrook and Paul George. Both guys had big moments in this game where they both got hot at a point, and there's not really a ton you can do. Obviously, you need to play better on your end, but sometimes you're just going to be outmatched.
Yeah, and that definitely happens. And obviously, you know, it'd be handy to have Trevion Graham and Damari Carroll back in the coming games over this road trip, but it's going to be tricky nonetheless. So obviously, we're just going to have to play with what we've gotten. Any final thoughts, Nick, before we finish this one up?
I think it's actually a benefit for the Nets that they faced OKC first on this road trip, because this is probably the best team on the road trip in my eyes. So it kind of sets the bar, sets the tone. All right, guys, we weren't physical enough, or we didn't match their intensity in the second half. If we play harder in the rest of these games, we'll have a really good chance to beat a lot of these teams. And obviously in that first half, we displayed a lot of good stuff. So I'm looking at it as a positive. Also, positive for the Utah game. Utah's going to be playing their third game in 4 nights when the Nets match up with them on Saturday. So that's a plus. And also, just a quick shout out, the Nets' magic number is 9.
9? Why is it a magic number, my friend?
Magic number for the playoffs.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So that's via Matt Moore on Twitter. So he's been doing it. I know GNRY has been doing it as well. So 9 is the number for the Nets. Real possibility for them to hit that. And like I said, I feel a lot better about the rest of the road trip, especially if they're able to kind of bring some of the positives from the last two games against teams like Utah, LA, Sacramento, teams that just aren't as good as OKC, and they don't necessarily have as much star power to make you, you know, regret some of your mistakes.
So 9 is in 9 more wins?
It's either 9 more wins, and I want to say it's a combination probably of, you know, the team who's in 9 losses.
Ninth.
Yeah. So it's a combination. 9 more wins, they would lock it up for sure. But it's combination easily. Thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think someone was putting out the fact that they could even win just 4 more games and be at 40 wins. Which would sort of, so like there's obviously so many other things. You know, the Wizards winning tonight against the Magic certainly helps, all those different things.
Detroit got blown out tonight. Reggie Jackson was injured. He said he was fine, but Detroit with two bad back-to-back games, maybe they could lose some rhythm. So things aren't terrible for the Nets, even with this tough road trip.
No, not at all. And there's obviously going to be some ups and downs, but you know, how we respond to it all is going to be, you know, a key sort of point going forward. But you know, one game at a time. I keep stressing that. And you know, there might be only 12 of them left, but this sort of road trip could dictate where the Nets sort of finish up. And you know, Utah, the Clippers, all these sort of games are going to mean plenty. And the fact that Detroit is suffering a little bit and had a decent sort of stretch, I think the Nets have a 4-game buffer or so on 9th and 10th. So things are looking okay, but you know, we need to keep doing the right things, and hopefully we can lock it up sooner rather than later, because in less than a month, I will be in NYC, baby.
Yeah, and Jack wants to see some playoff games. And yes, my final thought as we get out of here, Spencer Dinwiddie, when he brought this up on his presser, you know, the Nets defense has obviously been improving, but he thinks offensively the team still needs to find a rhythm, especially with all the guys coming back. So that's a positive. They believe they can improve on that end. And if they play at a high level defensively, offensively, they'll give themselves a shot every night. Jack, always a pleasure talking Nets with you. Thank everybody for listening. Check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsBlog.com, Dash Radio, and YouTube.